Hello and a very warm welcome to the listeners of the first series of this webcast brought to you by the European Medical Journal of Urology in partnership with GlaxoSmithKline. Today we'll be discussing the topic of antimicrobial resistance in the community setting with a focus on uncomplicated urinary tract infections and the importance and the role of urology in tackling this important public health threat. My name is Diogo Faringo, and I'm an employee of GSK in the Global Medical Affairs for Infectious Disease. Before starting this webcast, I want to fully disclose that I am a full-time employee of GlaxoSmithKline and that this podcast has been organized and funded by GSK. If you have any questions related to this podcast or any topics pertaining to the organization of this activity, please contact GSK Medical Advisor or EMJ. Finally, this podcast is intended for healthcare professionals only. So it's a great honor to introduce our honorable faculty who will be joining me today on this conversation. First of all, we are joined by Professor Florian Wagenlina, who is the head of the Clinical of Urology, Pediatric Urology and Andrology Department of the Justus Liebig University in Gießen, Germany. Florian, warm welcome to you. How are you today?
Dear Diogo, thank you very much for the invitation to this podcast. I'm fine, thank you.
We are also joined by Professor Jose Medina Polo, who integrates the urology faculty at the Hospital Universitario 12 of October in Madrid, Spain. A warm welcome to you, Jose. How are you today?
Hello, I'm fine. Thank you for the invitation, Diogo, and thank you for the organize this podcast that I think is going to be very interesting for everybody.
Let's get started and let's get the listeners to know a little bit more about you before we jump into the questions. So Professor Wagenlina, why don't you start? Tell us a little bit more about yourself. Why did you choose urology as a specialty and what areas of interest do you have?
Yes, thank you. Why did I choose urology? It's a good question because sometimes it just happens, but I always wanted to do a medical specialty where I can do surgery and have also conservative areas, and that is urology. It's just a vast medical specialty where you have almost everything from A to Z, from andrology to cystectomy. So it's a very encompassing and fulfilling medical specialty, and I have two or three research areas that are explicitly interesting to me. One is infections of the urogenital tract, urological infections. I'm interested in urinary tract infections, in uncomplicated and severe urinary tract infections, in antimicrobial resistance. I also have an interest in andrological areas, as our department has a deep specialty in andrology, in several areas of andrology. And within surgery, I have interests in renal surgery and prosthetic surgery. So that is my main interest. And it is one of the best specialties, I think, that you can choose.
Professor Medina Polo, over to you as well. Please tell us a little bit more about yourself and your areas of interest.
Okay, thank you. Well, I choose urology because I think it's a great specialty that you had a global knowledge and management of all genital problems, urinary tract dysfunctions, and our specialty includes surgery and medical treatment. So we deal with different diseases that are very prevalent in our patient and in the society. And regarding my areas of interest, I had a special interest in reconstructive urology, in female urology, and kidney transplantation, and also in infection. I think it's very good because we have to deal with the quality of life. It's not the oncology urology. We have to deal with infection, with reconstructed, in kidney transplantation. And I think it's the more challenging part of urology. I might carry out some research on infection, especially in nosocomially acquired infection, and also infection in patients with kidney transplantation and in the management of the urethral stenosis and incontinence.
Okay, and off to the webinar. Thank you very much for those introductions and getting the listeners to learn a little bit more about you. We are living today in a world that is dramatically changed. We live under the shadow of COVID-19. Really warm thank you to yourselves as faculty for the work that you're doing in the community to tackle this disease. And of course, all the listeners as well to this podcast and all the work that they are doing. An important question that poses is actually how COVID-19 actually have changed the antimicrobial threat in your clinical experience. So let's start by discussing this topic.
Yes, as you said, the pandemic certainly has dramatically changed, especially initially at the point where we did not know how to handle a COVID situation. With regards to antimicrobial resistance, I think there were two sides of the coin. On the one side, as you also have alluded, it created in the community as well as in the healthcare system aversion to infections. So everybody was more alert that infections are a threat to our well-being. Now, on the other hand, in the everyday handling of the pandemic, at least initially, I noted that the usual antimicrobial stewardship practices and strategies have been deferred to some extent because patients coming in and that were febrile were to some extent at first treated with broad-spectrum antimicrobials and then triaged for presence or absence of COVID-19 disease. But during the month when we learned to diagnose, to treat, to manage the pandemic, I think now we are back to the normal situation, how we approach infections and how we approach and deal with antimicrobial resistance.
Let's now turn into community-acquired UTI. I would like to understand what are the main challenges in clinical practice in UTI. Please reflect on the antimicrobial resistance in community-acquired UTI, and let's explore what are the main challenges that exist today.
Well, in my opinion, I like to say that I think that currently we had two pandemics. We had the COVID-19 pandemic, and we also had the multi-resistant drug pandemic, and we had to deal with both. It's true that our habit has changed the last year. I review the data from our hospital, the general data, and it's true that there was an increasing in the prescription of antibiotics and also an increasing in the resistance to the most common antibiotics. And also, we review the data of our hospital in Madrid. In urology, we don't have really a COVID-19 patient, but we also had an increase in more than 5 points in the resistance. But I agree with Florian, what the pandemic is an opportunity. We had to take the advantage of the pandemic because everybody, urologists, patient, the general citizen are more aware about the infection, and everybody clean their hands more commonly. And so my thing is we have to deal with two pandemic, not only the COVID, also with the multi-resistant drug microorganisms.
Thank you very much for your insights and your responses. Let's now focus on the patient. I would like to ask you, what is a typical patient in your clinical practice that you suspect antimicrobial resistance? What type of questions do you normally ask, and what information do you need to assess?
Okay, yeah, a typical patient in where we suspect antimicrobial resistance in general is usually patients that might be a bit more fragile patient that come from nursing homes. But where we have problems is in patients that have uncomplicated urinary tract infections, because the risk factors here are not as well delineated. They are not as well structured as in the other patients. And these patients are difficult because usually they get low attendance, but they need a more detailed approach. And what I usually do is I ask for putative risk factors such as antimicrobial treatment in the past 6 months, maybe also foreign travel to countries with high antibiotic resistance prevalences, and maybe also elderly females that suffer from recurrent urinary tract infections that have maybe an estrogen deficiency, postmenopausal patients. So these are all individual factors which I like to usually ask these patients. But in general, they need a bit more attendance and a bit more detailed approach as they get for the time being. Yes.
I absolutely agree. This is Florian review the main characteristics of the patient, and I will ask to add two more type of patient. This is those that are treated with antibiotic with asymptomatic bacteriuria. There are patients that receive antibiotics and they don't have any symptoms, and it's true that this patient had a higher incident of infection, and they also had a higher incident of resistance. And also I will ask to include patients that received treatment in a hospital or in a nursery, and also patient with a catheter. Regarding the urological patient, especially those with a catheter in the upper urinary tract, for example, because of lithiasis or cancer.
The next question that I would like to explore today has to do with the current clinical practice. I would like to ask, what is really the need in clinical practice to replace conventional culture and sensitivity tests for community UTI infections?
Well, I'm not sure if we are there yet to replace culture and sensitivity. What we need certainly is a point of care test system, not only delivering the species identification, but at least for the uncomplicated UTI and the cystitis, a handful of antibiotic resistances in order to know if the antibiotics we usually give to these patients are susceptible or are resistant. And what is needed certainly in clinical practice for those patients, that these systems need to be on the one hand point of care, on the other hand they need to be easy to handle, and they need to be in a way that even the technician in the practice, for example, could handle that. And we need also to have a rather rapid readout. So that means everything that takes longer than 20 to 30 minutes is probably not adequate to be used in clinical practice.
Yes, I also agree. I think that we don't have to replace the text. It's important to know when we need the test. For example, in non-complicated acute cystitis, urinary culture is usually not necessary because we have to prescribe the treatment regarding the symptoms that the patient gave to us. And also it's important to explain that it's not necessary usually to have a culture to check that the urine is sterile, because it doesn't have sense. If the patient had no symptom after the antibiotics is an asymptomatic bacteriuria. So I think the conventional test we had to continue with them, and it can be useful to in some case, special case when we don't find the pathogen in the urine, we can use culture to try to find which is the microorganism in the urine. But the conventional test, I think, is correct for a normal and for most of the cases.
I have an interesting question here, which I know that Professor Wagenlehner, you have done extensive work on this area. It's related to patient microbiome. It would be great to understand that in a little bit more detail in the setting of ETI. So what is the role of the patient microbiome in the propensity for urinary tract infections, and what strategies can be used in clinical practice?
Thank you. Microbiome is a difficult question because we have up to date not really fully understood the role of the microbiome. And then we also have to differentiate, if we talk about urinary tract infections, between the fecal and the urinary microbiome. But in general, what we understand is that the better or the larger the diversity of the microbiome, the better for the individual person. And that is what we have to keep in mind. Our attempt should be to try and not to damage the microbiome. And that is essentially what we are also trying to bring about in our guidelines, to use antibiotics that have a low collateral damage, meaning that we preserve those bacteria that are usually not involved in the infection. Now, what is the propensity for urinary tract infections is difficult to say. We know that we have beneficial bacteria, for example, lactobacilli, that is known for a long time, that vaginal lactobacilli, for example, are preventive. We know very little about the other bacterial species. And now several strategies have been tried and also invented to preserve or to boost, for example, this preventive microbiome bacteria. And again, the last word has not been said, but I think it's a very interesting field where we need much more research, much more ideas about in order to include the microbiome in our strategic management armamentarium.
Well, I agree that we need more research in microbiome, but we believe that it has a role in urinary tract infection, and also the microbiome has a role in other urological diseases, for example, in urinary incontinence, also in pain in the bladder, or so in overactive bladder. Those entities, it seems that the microbiome had a role, but we don't really know how to deal and the correct treatment. We think that lactobacillus is going to be useful, but we don't know with what we need, how long, and how to correct. So we had a lot of research. And we can take some information about the microbiome in the feces, and we know that some entities can improve with changes in the microbiome. So my conclusion is we had to do research. We had to know which thing, which factor can change the microbiome, and what is our task to recover the microbiome and to improve the quality of life of our patients. So is the future.
The next question I would like to reflect in the need for multidisciplinary teams. And over to you, Jose, first. I would like to ask you, what recommendations do you have for the urologist and urogynecologist that are listening to us today regarding reaching out to their multidisciplinary teams to implement successful stewardship programs in the community?
Yes, I think that we had to work together, especially in urinary tract infection in the community settings, because the patients are managed in different cities. For example, in primary care, some in gynecology, others go directly to the pharmacy. So we had to work together, and it's important to have a common protocol between everything and urologists, nurse, pharmacy, and primary care physician had to work together. It's important because we need homogeneous protocols. We had to work together in order to have the better results, and the patient always receive the same message, and also to know the resistance and the microorganism that we had in the our community. So it's important that everybody work together because it's the only way to know the problems and to adopt global solution for the health systems.
Yes, Jose, I fully agree. It's a multidisciplinary task. It's a multidisciplinary team where we have to give our urologist input, and we have, as urologists, inherently a large we have large interests, and we had have large know-how, for example, in catheter-associated urinary tract infections, in urosepsis, and also differentiating infections against asymptomatic bacteria, for example, where you do not need antibiotic treatment in general. And this is, I think, our role as urologists to contribute to the multidisciplinary teams, and also to present this knowledge and to educate other urologists in that regard. But I fully agree that it is a multidisciplinary task where we have an individual role in our specialty.
Florian, Jose, thank you so much for being present here today and discussing this important topic of antimicrobial resistance in the setting of UTI. Before we close, I really would like to ask you if there is one action that you think that your colleagues, your peers hearing this podcast today could take away and start implementing tomorrow in their day-to-day to mitigate the risk of AMR and to foster stewardship in their communities, what would you recommend them to do? Let's start with you, Professor Wagenlehne.
Yes, the one thing I think, in short, is to make a differentiated approach to urinary tract infections. And the same is to have a differentiated approach to uncomplicated cystitis. As I've said, these patients usually receive a very low attendance, very little time in the clinical practice. And I think it is worthwhile to think a little more about this entity and to give it a differentiated approach, which patient needs which antibiotic, and which patient might be at increased risk for antimicrobial resistance and needs maybe another treatment approach.
Yes, my proposal is to make a multidisciplinary team, have a meeting with the microbiologists, with the gynecologists, with the primary care doctor to do a protocol. Because it's good because we are going to create a profile of patients, including the antibiotic that we recommend. And when we have the protocol, we share the protocol with everybody, and it's easier to everybody to select the antibiotic, to know when we have to be worried about antimicrobial, and to know when we have to ask to the microbial biologist to help us with the treatment. So my recommendation is do a meeting with everybody interested in infection and share the information at the protocol with all the team of urologists, gynecologists, and also with primary care attention.
Thank you very much for sharing your insights with the listeners and with ourselves. It's been great to have you today. I hope you enjoyed the discussion. To the listeners, this is the first series of a webinar of a podcast. We also have a webinar available at the EMJ website that if you haven't listened to, we would like to invite you to do so, exactly on the same topic. On behalf of the EMJ and on behalf of GSK, thank you very much to the faculty and thank you to you for listening and tuning in with us today. Thank you and goodbye.